Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 136 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I am doing pretty good. I am very excited to talk about one of our topics.
Yes.
Because
we have multiple topics to topic about.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to just topic right on in. Yeah. You know, the funny thing is there are so many hours of me podcasting out there. And usually I can't talk anymore at the end of an episode. It's rare at the very beginning that I just screw up right away. So
great sign.
It's going to be a fun one.
It's a great sign. Well, so we're going to hit up some news first before we dive into our game topic discussion. Let's get the bad news out of the way at the top. So, unfortunately, like many businesses are doing right now for lots of different reasons, there are some big economic reasons going on right now. But Hasbro laid off 3% of their workforce. Now, this is not Wizards specifically. This is their parent company, Hasbro. But unfortunately, it is affecting Wizards specifically.
Yeah.
We do not have a ton of information about how many people at Wizards were affected. The one big one we have, however, is a name that a lot of people would probably be fairly familiar with, and that is Todd Kendrick. And if you don't recognize the name, you've probably seen him before, as he is the face of most of their video content. So any of the, like, Unearthed Arcana, any of the announcing of the new books, any of the interviews, that is Todd. So that is a fairly sucky one, because Todd is very, very passionate about this game. And you can tell that from just his exuberance and energy around all the things. So that one sucks a lot.
It really does, because I mean, you said it perfectly. Like, everything that he's done in the different videos just highlights how much he enjoys this game, how much he has been supportive, and is honestly a really great voice of just, like, praise, and, like, he's a good cheerleader for it too. So
yeah,
like, having that you know, front face, like, positivity for Dungeons and Dragons, you know, from Wizards of the Coast, is really a benefit. So it's a bummer that he's gone, because, you know, he was really good at what he did.
Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see what their content looks like moving forward. And obviously, and this is not specifically related to Wizards, we know that they just wrapped up a giant dev cycle with the 2024 edition. And a lot of times when big things like that happen, you do see turnover, not necessarily as a bad thing, but because a lot of times those are just good inflection points for people to say, I did my thing. We finished working on this giant project and I'm ready for something new. Right.
Yeah.
And so we saw that, I think, a little bit with the retirement of Jeremy Crawford and Chris Perkins. And we also found out in the last week or two that Jess Lanzalo, I believe, the VP of D&D, who's been there for about 8 years, is leaving as well. This is not a layoff. This is just a leaving. And again,
moving on to different opportunities,
to other things. This not super surprising to see some amount of turnover after the completion of a big project. And I think we've talked about this before. I'm okay with some of the old guard leaving and seeing some of the newer people, maybe some of the people who've only been around since fifth or fourth edition, being able to take up the reins of the game and bring their own new ideas and new game design to D&D. I think that's very healthy. in a lot of ways. So that was, but that was a big thing. And then the other really interesting thing is that the Wizards of the Coast president, not the VP one, but just the for entirety of Wizards of the Coast, President Cynthia Williams is also stepping down. And she is going to be leaving, and we don't know who will be replacing her at this point.
Yeah.
She was only there for like 2 years. Obviously, they're a fairly big 2 years because a lot of stuff happened. But that's just one of those, huh, that's interesting type things. And we'll definitely be watching to see who might be taking over after that.
Yeah, it's just kind of interesting to see the, you know, the president step down after, you know, a big release and everything, as well as the VP of D&D itself, because I mean, those are positions that aren't reliant on fifth edition being done and out. So, you know, like you said, moving forward, moving on, moving to something different kind of makes sense. But I mean, when it's someone in a big position like that, it's always curious as to really what the reasons why are, or, you know, if they're just tired of the job, because when you are that high up, you have a lot of weight put on you, a lot of responsibility and everything. And, you know, some people thrive in it. Some people love doing it, or some people want to do it for a while and then move on to something else, 'cause they've, you know, they've shot their shot there, you know? So could be any number of reasons. It doesn't necessarily mean it's something bad. Doesn't necessarily mean it's something good. You know, it's just, without fully knowing, it's always a curious situation.
Yeah. But just overall, lots of changes for Wizards in general.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we will certainly keep an eye on that and see who, you know, who gets elevated, who comes in to replace these people, and so on and so forth, and how this affects things going forward.
Yeah.
The other really big thing that just happened in the last week that kind of came out of left field. I don't remember. I believe it was the 16th. So just, you know, like a week ago on Monday, there was the surprise out of nowhere news drop that Chris Perkins and Jeremy Crawford, you know, those two guys who just finished up their tenure on D&D after both being there for like 15 plus years, have been hired by Critical Role's game division, Darrington Press.
Yeah. And first of all this happened on the same day. Like, we found out all this information same day, which was crazy. But here's the thing about those two, you know, ending up at Darrington Press. It took me a while. I had to actually think about it a lot just to kind of see, you know, where it was, where, what I kind of felt or thought was going to be happening. You know, you and I kind of discussed it a little bit. I talked to about it a little bit with some friends, and like, ultimately the biggest thing that I think that we need to just throw out right now is that there is probably zero to very little chance that they're going to be working specifically on Daggerheart right now, since it's already released. So this isn't going to be like they're taking over that project or anything. And a lot of the wording and stuff that's they put out, like in their release, you know, with talking to them, is they're excited to seemingly play in like multiple games. Like, they're not looking to kill Dungeons and Dragons. They're looking to explore different options and different things, different worlds. And I was kind of, you know, very cautious beforehand, but after kind of coming to that idea and conclusion and stuff, I'm really excited about this, because they're both incredibly creative, and the idea of just kind of throwing themselves into multiple, like, I don't know, IPs or game systems or something like that is pretty cool.
Yeah. And this comes at a time when also recently announced Ivan Van Norman stepping down from Darrington Press. And he has been there basically since the beginning, kind of, I believe, was like the creative director or something. And in a lot of ways, and he, I think it sounded like it was amiable, like it was on good terms, yeah. But he's leaving to focus on his own company and such. But it also makes sense that this would happen, given that they're bringing on two such seasoned high level people as like creative directors. So it kind of makes sense. I don't know if one was because of the other or one caused the other, but it is kind of interesting nonetheless. But I kind of agree with you. Like, I had very mixed thoughts about this, because on one hand I was, let's give Chris and Jeremy their due, right? They've done so much for the game. They've done so much for Dungeons and Dragons as a whole, for fifth edition especially. But at the same time, in some ways I was excited to see them retiring so that other people could take up the reins.
Yeah, just because you want new classes, and we know that 100% Chris Perkins not against that, or is kind of against that, but
exactly. But this is, so it's easy to think that they were brought on, and obviously it's going to be a different game. They'll likely be doing some work on Daggerheart, I'm sure. That would certainly seem to signal that,
but not like mechanical stuff, which is what I think a lot of people were kind of assuming, considering they were so deep into, you know, just the revamp of,
at least Jeremy for sure.
Yeah.
Because Chris has always been more the adventure guy, the storyteller and stuff, and Jeremy has always been the nitty-gritty mechanics guy. So in some ways I'm hoping that they don't do a lot of work on Daggerheart. I'm hoping they do something completely different.
Yeah,
same. Something that will give them, because Daggerheart, for all that it is still a fantasy tabletop RPG. Obviously, it is different than D&D, but at the same time, it is similar in a lot of ways as well. So I would love to see them do other things, because Darrington is a full-on, well, they've got Candela, they've got Daggerheart, but they've also got several board games. Some of them very good. I've played a few of them.
Yeah, as well, and as like so, more RPGs that have been announced that aren't out yet.
Exactly.
So they have a lot of things under their hat that they're working on. So bringing these two in as, you know, creative leads in some form is just a benefit to what's coming out, as well as stuff that they're, you know, coming up with.
Yeah. So personally, I'm hoping to see that they get to stretch their creative muscles more so outside of the fantasy tabletop RPG sphere than in. Right. So that would be my hope, because at the end of the day, and I'm trying to remember if this was like an Alpha Stream article or a Sly Flourish article or something. I'd have to go check, and I will make sure to reference it. There was a big article that one of them did that was basically talking about how you can't compete with D&D. Like, you just can't. It is the 800 pound gorilla. It is the juggernaut. It is the monolith. The only thing that will take down D&D is D&D.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same. I liken it to World of Warcraft. Yeah. There's been so many vaunted WoW killers. There's an entire graveyard of WoW killers.
Some of them didn't even last a year.
Yeah. Nothing is going to kill World of Warcraft except for World of Warcraft. Nothing is going to kill D&D except for D&D. And so at the end of the day, no RPG's focus should be to take down D&D. An RPG's focus should be about finding their niche and doing what they can. Because at the end of the day, even though Critical Role is big, it is the biggest third-party publisher, period. I don't think there's, like, from an audience perspective and such, there's any contest.
Exactly.
And they've got a huge built-in fan base. Daggerheart will sell pretty well. It will. Whether that continues is yet to be seen. Whether it will flourish and grow beyond the initial hype is yet to be seen. People are enjoying it. I hope to get to play it here in a few months to check it out, because I'm very interested as well. But I think at the end of the day, everything should be looked at as a rising tide floats all boats.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the thing is something that's, way back when on, I think Azeroth Roundtable, John and I spoke about it, and you know, we always said and wanted to say that, you know, competition is what makes everything better. You know, if this is just a D&D clone, then, you know, why are you playing that as opposed to playing D&D? Pathfinder is similar. It's another D20 system, but that rule set and everything is just like so incredibly different. And there are people out there who are, you know, live and die by Pathfinder. What is it? 2.5, whatever version they're on. They think it's the greatest thing. Meanwhile, I see some of the rules and how some of the mechanics work. I'm like, nope, I'm good. You know, not for me, but it is for them. Having something out there that's different, that does something in a different way, only grows our entire audience and gives people an opportunity to, you know, kind of put their foot in, whether they eventually come to D&D and love it, whether they start here or move to something else. It doesn't matter, because with those different storytelling devices, with those different mechanics, with those different things out there, you can only improve because everybody's working to make the best thing. And that's how, you know, you take something and you see what they do, and then you can, you know, tweak it or try something different or, you know, completely pull from it. It's how we homebrew our content, you know, consume a bunch of stories or media or different things and, you know, kind of pull bits from here and there and throw it all together into a story. My favorite film series, Star Wars, is entirely based off of, like, you know, early serials and westerns and samurai movies and stuff, because it's all about the hero's journey. It started somewhere and it's all thrown together. So having different aspects of games, different worlds, different types of play just makes everything better and grows the entire hobby. And I think overall, that's what we need to take from this. And the fact that Darrington is becoming one of those companies that really, you know, has a big section of the player base can only make it better for everybody.
Yeah. And that is the hope. So there's potential, a lot of potential, a lot of potential. So it'll be interesting to see where they take it.
Yeah. I think so.
On the D&D specific front, there is, what I love, you know, brand new classes.
Now that Chris Perkins is gone.
and Jeremy are gone. There is a brand new D&D Gunslinger class that is now up on D&D Beyond. This is one of the Mage Hand Press fully custom classes from the pages of Valda's Spire of Secrets source book that also recently landed on D&D Beyond. So if you are in looking for that type of class, this is obviously one of the many gunslinger classes that have been made over time. Mage Hand Press is obviously one of the bigger third-party publishers. So it's just very cool to see new classes get onto D&D Beyond, because that just expands the ability to do things. And I'm hoping this will lead to them eventually giving people the tools to use homebrew to make full classes as well, versus just the subclasses. But the fact now that I believe we have two new third party subclasses beyond, you know, the Blood Hunter that's been there for forever. Mm-hmm. Now with the Illrigger and the Gunslinger, gives me some amount of hope for that. Yeah. So that's exciting. It's over on D&D Beyond if you want to check it out.
Yeah, I am definitely going to be picking this up for specifically for my Spelljammer campaign, because, you know, I'm planning on, you know, kind of giving it a steampunk Firefly-ish kind of setting. So you kind of need to have a Western class in there, and this is totally the way to go. And I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, new classes. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. And then finally, Screen Rant actually has a really good article about the quickly upcoming Dragon Book, Dragon Delves. This is the anthology Dragon Book that is coming out soon. And they have a little bit of a preview of it. But one of the things, and we'll obviously link that in the show notes, but one of the things that really stood out to me on this preview was how they talked about the simplicity of running the adventures in such a way that they basically were going to run the adventure. They had a power outage and couldn't get to the digital book until just like a very short time before the session was supposed to happen. But Dragon Delves was written in such a way that very little to no prep was actually needed, and they were able to run the whole adventure with barely having any time to look it over first.
Yeah.
And I actually really, really like that. That stood out to me because I think D&D needs books like this. Obviously, you don't want everything to be like that, because when you have preppable campaigns or ones that you need to prep with, they will usually be more in depth, more rich, you know, whatever. There's more you can get out of them. But at the same time, having adventures, you can just be like, oh, I need to run something in an hour. What am I going to do? And just being able to grab one of those and be able to run it just kind of ad hoc. I love the ability to do that. And I'm really glad that they are doing content that allows for something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, just going through this versus something like the Radiant Citadel, which has, you know, kind of like a longer, you know, adventure type and everything like that. Again, not knocking that, because that is an amazing book. Amazing module. Definitely pick that one up. But the fact that these are just, you know, kind of quick things, you know, short adventures and stuff, it's great for one or two shots. It's great for if somebody can't make it, you know, have everybody either use their character or throw together just a backup for when, you know, people are like, have your own little tiny, you know, West March campaign with, you know, when people can't show up or something. Like, this is one of those things that you're right, we need more of. And the best part about something like this is if you have a campaign and you're at a cliffhanger and don't know what to do next, throw in a small side adventure while you're, you know, prepping your main one, and you're good for a session or two before you need to jump back into your own stuff. I really like this, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It definitely makes me interested in checking it out for being able to set up stuff quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I don't have the exact date off the top of my head. We'll look it up, but it's soon. It is coming 14 out soon.
Days. It's July 8th.
July 8th. So very soon. Yeah. Everyone will be able to check that out very, very soon. Obviously, check your local game store. Or D&D Beyond will have copies of that. All right, Ben, let's jump into the topic that we've been waiting for months to talk about.
Yes.
I'm very excited. We actually postponed this because Ben was waiting to do it in his own campaign first. And that happened this last weekend, which is why this is a day late, later than it normally is.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very excited to talk about this. We're going to be talking about flashbacks in games.
Yeah. So I'm not the person who came up with this concept or whatever, but months and months ago, in fact, I need to see if I can figure out when exactly I came up with this, but I thought, you know, I have this whole huge thing that happened in the past in my homebrew, and the adventure that's happening directly ties to this, you know, big war, then this big event and everything that happened. And I'm like, how can I convey what happened without just, you know, expositing for an hour? And so I'm like, well, it'd be cool if the players, you know, if my players can play it. And, but I'm like, but that makes no sense because, you know, this happened like almost 4,000 years ago. Oh, I know. Let's do a one shot in that environment with what happens and throw them in there. And I thought about it, I'm like, I can't have them be like the biggest main characters of a thing that happened, because you know, these are iconic things. And if something were to happen, if one of them were to die, it ruins my entire, you know, history that I've written and that they already know of and stuff. So I'm like, let's have them be kind of people in this war that that's going to happen. And so then I just kind of sent out a thing and said, hey guys, you know, at your earliest convenience, no rush, make a level 10 character for a one shot that we're going to be doing in the future. And just left it at that. Did absolutely nothing else. No other prep whatsoever. Didn't give them a world, didn't give them anything like that. And just, they're just like, oh, okay, cool. I created the campaign in D&D Beyond for this July 2nd of last year. So that's how long we've been just had these characters just kind of out there floating around, you know, just on a whim. Because again, this was something I knew was going to happen eventually. And holy crap, I didn't realize it's been almost a year. So there we go. And so since then, I was really excited because I'm like, this whole big backstory that I've been talking about that's been kind of leading up and everything, I'm going to see what happens at the same time as my players. And it just got me so excited for it. So when we get to the what we've been playing, we're definitely going to be talking about kind of what happened and everything like that. But the biggest thing that I can say about this is that I think the reason that it was as successful as it was is because it really was played out. It was a show, don't tell kind of moment. And because of that, you know, I could, and I knew like what the ultimate goal was. Everything was, you know, kind of on the fly and just to kind of see what happens. It gave my players a chance to try something different. It gave them a chance to, you know, get foreshadowing for things in the future based off of something that happened in the past. And just overall, it gave them like a little bit more of information on how things work for this like ritual that's coming up. And it was just a ton of fun to play. And I know that you did a flashback too, not that long ago, even though I made you wait for a very long time to talk about it. But like, what was your experience? How did you go about creating it?
Yeah. So I think I want to go with your phrasing, the show don't tell, because I think it is for especially pivotal moments. It can be a very, very cool thing for the players to experience. And honestly, especially if you're doing your own homebrew world, it can be very fulfilling as a DM to get to delve into some like the lore and the history of your own world to kind of showcase like a key pivotal moment. Mm-hmm. And so in my case, mine was a flashback to a moment in a battle. And it was also a really fun opportunity to let my players play with high level characters, because I had them create like level 14, level 15 characters for this. I didn't tell them what it was about. They thought it was stuff that I was going to use to like go after them. It's something that was really fun. But being able to create these characters and then have these characters they created be part of this event, that the outcome is already known. Mm-hmm. Right. And so one thing, as you mentioned, that you have to, as you're planning, something like this, like a flashback to a scene or a moment in history, is you either have to create the scenario to where the desired outcome will happen regardless.
Yeah.
Or you need to get your players on board with it to where when you get to pivotal points that need to happen, you basically tell them what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Essentially. Not that you're like controlling what they're doing for the entirety of the thing, but flashbacks for the most part are much more on rails experience. So like I said, you either need to orchestrate your scenario so that if they all die, you kill them all. Like the odds are overwhelming. There's no way they can win regardless. Right. Yeah. Or they need to be in on it to where you're also coaching them in whatever spots you need to so that the desired outcome happens. Because flashbacks are less about player agency and more about experiencing the story. And remember, when you're only doing this for a session or two, and you're only doing this every once in a while, it's a very fine, perfectly legitimate thing to do from like a player agency standpoint, because this is kind of like the bought in angle of you're experiencing history. You're not changing history. You might be writing a little bit of the non-important details as you go, which is super fun. But at the end of the day, XYZ happens. So we need to get to that point somehow.
Yeah. And one of the big things that I did beforehand is in the previous session, which we still haven't gone over on the what you've been doing because it's been a while since we recorded, I was actually able to play twice, which doesn't happen. But basically, I ended that up ended that session with, you know, a flash and then the characters looking through someone else's eyes. Like the best way I described it as that you basically quantum leapt into another person to experience this thing to see what happened. And I kind of gave them, you know, the heads up before we played on Saturday that, you know, this is, you know, it's a one shot thing. There's a chance you could die. You know, don't get too attached to your characters. We don't know what's going to happen with it. And being just kind of straight up, you know, with that, letting them know that this event has already happened and all that stuff. Everybody was just on board, ready to go. So it, you know, those out of session talks, like we always say, communication is the best. They really kind of helped just sell the whole thing. And we all kind of jumped in and had a blast. It was so much fun. They could go, they knew that, like from the briefing, I said, okay, your group is going to go and do this. We're going to call for a retreat at some point. You're going to run back to here. Then we're going to start this ritual. A shield is going to pop up. You need to get in there. Once that shield pops up, you have 12 seconds to get in there, because after that ritual finishes, everything outside the shield, probably dead. So, you know, I gave them the, hey, these are your goals. Try to meet them. If you don't, it's still fine. Because ultimately, like you said, the thing is going to happen. And I built in and gave myself that little bit with the shield, because it's like, can't have the ritual interrupted because it happened in the past. So, you know, globes of invulnerability are a thing in the game. I made it so that good guys can walk through it. Bad guys couldn't. So, you know, I'm the DM. I can do what I want.
That's right.
And I do it in service of the story and the players. So, yeah, you know, I don't abuse it as too much, I don't think. But, you know, we'll see.
But yeah, I really like I think flashbacks are an extremely fun tool to use. Obviously, it's not a tool you want to overuse.
No.
But it's a great way to, instead of just having exposition, let the players experience it, because in my mind, that will help connect the players more to the experience, to the lore, and to the world itself, because then they can still make memorable moments.
Yes.
Even in the flashbacks, even when it's a little bit on rails, even when the outcome is already determined because it's history, right? Yeah. And so like in mind, like the person who is playing the barbarian before they died actually hit the big dragon. What a cool moment. Like no one expected that to happen. He still died, but it was super cool. And everyone was super pumped when it happened, because that it just felt like such a win, even though they knew the outcome was this whole group died protecting and sending this artifact off elsewhere to keep it out of the hands of the dragon. So I really like being able to do that. Make sure you plan out your flashback well. I think in a lot of ways, my flashback session was one of the sessions that I, anytime I do a flashback session, I actually outline it a little more than some of my normal sessions, because I know I have to hit certain beats.
Yeah.
And I know the outcome of it versus a lot of times in my normal sessions, I don't know the outcome of what's going to happen. I have ideas about what's going to happen. But because you know what the outcome is, you can plan better.
Exactly.
And so don't be afraid to spend some time doing that.
I did that exact same thing because, you know, there were certain beats that had to happen that I wanted to happen. And then not only that, there were certain, I guess for back of a letter, gosh, I really am having a hard time talking. Lack of a better descriptor for it. I also wanted to add spectacles in there too, so that they can kind of see this crazy stuff is happening around them while they're like a foot soldier on the battle of this happening. Like, spoilers for what I've been playing session, like Tiamat shows up, Bahamut comes in and tackles her to the ground, giving the party a chance to get into the shield and stuff, like, you know, all these crazy kind of things happening around them to really put the weight of what it was like and why this thing actually happened. And it was just kind of fun just being all like, what would be a cool thing to see? I don't need to roll any dice for this whatsoever. It's just going to happen and it's going to be cool. And that, honestly, that part was really fun. And then, as always with my players, they surprised me with some of their creativity and some of the things that they did that ended up being pretty big deals in this session and things that were happening in the past. So, heck yeah, they remember these heroes that they embodied did something that mattered in this giant war and like end ritual that ended the whole thing. And I think that's a really important thing. And I'm, again, just proud of my players with what they did.
Yeah. And I think from a flashback perspective, obviously big battles or wars or whatever are great times to use flashback, right? Because there's usually specific things that need to be, the tasks that need to be completed, and there's combat and action, right? Those often lend towards very, very good flashback sessions. But remember, flashbacks don't always need to be that.
No, definitely not.
Sometimes they can be RP, holy RP, where you have to do non-combat-y investigation type things, or leads through something like that, where you can kind of half let your players figure stuff out, but know they're going to do that or see certain events. But like I said, it lends better to more that action-y combat type thing, especially when it's just session to session. One of the other things you can do, though, is you can do flashbacks in miniature. A lot of times I've done flashbacks within sessions where we jump back to a certain player's history, where I will just take 10, 15, 20, maybe even 30 minutes with a person and play out a scene from their past. A lot of times I will give the player a heads up, or we will have talked about this.
Yeah.
And it's something relevant to the story for everyone, or potentially it's something that is much more interesting to play out so that everyone can see it versus just exposition. That can be another great use of flashback. And it also really can not only spotlight a specific person if you need to, but it can also really be a great way for that person to practice their RP in kind of a, you know, quote unquote, safe environment.
Yeah.
That is something that they are intimately familiar with because it is their character. So that's a great way to use a flashback as well. If you're not just as a character by character thing and not necessarily just as a whole session.
Yeah. And so I just came up with a random idea of something that could be fun, but this is a very specific case, so don't know if it's going to work all that well, but let's say one of your player characters, you know, dies and you're bringing a new character in. Why don't you do a flashback on how they kind of end up being where they are and have the other members of the party be members of their old party who like died? I know, depending on the backstory that this character kind of brings with them, you know, they can kind of play it out and go into it. And, you know, that way the players will have a connection with that character already. I mean, aside from, oh, our friend's playing it, but, you know, they could tell the story and they also have that emotional connection to kind of help build that trust a little bit faster, just, you know, at, you know, above the table and stuff. I don't know. Like I said, just came to mind right now. Not exactly, you know, a, hey, use this all the time kind of thing. But, you know, again, just another different example of something that you can use. I also thought it'd be really fun to be a really bad adventuring party going through a dungeon and, you know, slowly setting off traps along the way. You get to a certain point until finally one of you dies. Then the real party comes in and sees all these traps set off and random bodies along the way or something.
That's one thing. And I mean, this is just kind of a different discussion in some ways, but I love throwing in some already set off traps whenever I do dungeons or stuff like that, because almost assuredly in nearly every case, your party is not going to be the first to ever go through this thing or be at this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So make it look lived in.
Heck,
it adds a lot of flavor.
It happened in Goonies. It happened in Raiders of the Lost Ark. It can happen in your game. Simple as that. Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, it's flashbacks are something that we've both been excited about. We've both recently run. I think they can add a lot to your campaign and be very memorable for your players as well, especially if you want to highlight a specific event or it potentially is relevant to something that's going on in the present time. Mm-hmm. So definitely consider it in your campaign if it is something that could enhance what you are currently doing. And if you've done flashbacks before, we'd love to hear it. Let us know. Shoot us an email at deandiscussions@gmail.com. Hit us up in Discord. We'd love to hear stories of flashbacks that you've run and how those went.
Yeah, exactly. They're fun to do. Try it out. You know, they have a taste of history.
Yeah. All right. So, Ben, I know there was a little something you wanted to talk about. For those that didn't know, Saturday was actually Free RPG Day.
Yes.
And local game stores everywhere, as well as digital from third-party companies and RPG, tabletop RPG companies of all sorts, usually released a free preview or a small adventure or a learn to play. My store, I actually went, my store had probably 2-3 dozen different, like little, you know, mini booklets of all the different, RPGs that were participating in this Free RPG Day. And I was able to grab quite a few. I'm excited to look through, but Ben, I believe you were actually played one of the Free RPG Day ones, right?
No, actually. I played on, it was on the 14th. It was actually the International Day of Play. There was a module that Wizards had put out of, it's Borderlands Quest Goblin Trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So basically our local game store that we love and go to, Silver Dragon. If you're in Phoenix, Silver Dragon, it's awesome. They don't sponsor us, but I'll plug them as much as I can because that store is great. But they have like D&D days, like usually once a month, where they'll have, you know, three blocks of like 4 hours where they have just a bunch of games being run at the same time. And it turned out that they were given the International Day of Play game for some of their DMs to run. And Nevermore and I got a chance to play it, and we had a lot of fun with it. It's just basically, you know, hunt down some goblins who stole something, and yeah, worked out really well. So yeah, I really recommend it. But yeah, it's International Day of Play. It's emphasized the importance of play for children in their social and academic development. And create opportunities for safe and accessible places. So yeah.
Very cool. That sounds like a worthy cause.
Definitely. So yeah, we'll make sure to have a link to that supplement. You can get on D&D Beyond. It's free. So definitely check it out. You know, small short adventures are always a plus. Like, you know, we talked about with Dragon Delves, and this is definitely one of those.
Yeah. That's awesome. Any of the short, easily accessible, easy to run things, for the one shots, or learn to plays those are always great to have.
Yeah. So, and I mean,
very cool.
This is really good for like an intro too. It comes with 8 pre-made character sheets. It goes kind of like a step-by-step, like this is how you DM through this and stuff. The module itself is written really well. And the adventure is, you know, a really good, just kind of intro adventure. Like I said, really recommend it. We played as level 3 characters and had fun. I nearly died twice. It was great.
Excellent. Well, thanks for letting us know about that, Ben, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes on dndiscussions.com if you want to check it out as well. All right, and with that, we come to the end of our episode, but of course we usually like to talk about what we are doing in our game. So Ben, we obviously know that you have played a little bit since the last time we talked. So what have you been doing?
Yeah. So not the flashback session, but the one before that. My players were in the middle of a dungeon, you know, going through some challenges and everything to, you know, get to this tablet that has part of a scroll written on it, or part of a ritual written on it. Again, can't talk. And so I went through, I had, you know, kind of different, totally like Indiana Jones and Last Crusade, you know, like here, there's 3 challenges you've got to get through. And the second one was something along the lines of like, gosh, you know what? I'm just going to pull it up so I can read it and not sound like I totally forgot what I was saying. But it involved like illusion and stuff, you know, they had to kind of decipher what was going on. The challenge was safety can be an illusion and an illusion can be safety, which, you know, was like kind of weird double speak and stuff. But when they opened up the room where that challenge was, basically jets of flame were shooting from every surface of the ceiling, just kind of shooting down on the ground. And in the middle of the room was a big pool of liquid. And so my thought was, well, some of that fire is going to be an illusion that they can just, you know, kind of walk their way through. But if they jump in the water for like safety, it's going to be acid. It's not going to be a good thing. So, you know, kind of very easy hint, but also there were a couple things that they could do to, you know, kind of figure it out and see what's going on. And my super high perception cleric noticed that there was like a less burnt pathway through the room that they can kind of, you know, walk through and stuff, whereas, you know, all the scorch marks and stuff from where the real flame is hitting would, you know, make the floor all scorchy. And then they also did detect magic, which totally showed the path of the illusion, which was a way simpler answer to, you know, figuring anything out, but you know what, that's what those spells are for. So yeah, they're able to kind of, you know, make their way through. It was pretty great, worked out really well. And then the last one I had was walk the path of darkness. And basically they walked into a room and in the center is this like undefined, just bright light. As they walk into the lights, like it slows them down to the point where it's like, it feels like their shadows just like pulling them back. And in order to get past that, they essentially had to walk on a shadow in order to, you know, progress forward without being like stuck down. So they figured that one out pretty fast and super duper quickly just pulled out like their bedrolls and held it in front of them to create a shadow. So they just walked through the room really fast, which I'm like, yay, you figured that one out way faster than I thought. So yippee. Like I said, my player's super smart. But yeah, I figured, you know, the hints were good enough. They were loose enough so that it wasn't like a, hey, this is what you do kind of thing. And, you know, the rooms were fun to build and, you know, I had fun on the map with them. So then they get to the final room, which there was no challenge, nothing about this. And there's a Sphinx in the middle of the room and then two planetars. And the Sphinx welcomed them in, introduced himself, congratulated them on coming in, told them to take a drink of the water next to him because, you know, it's like, hey, you've gone through trials, drink up, heal yourself. And just to show him it was safe, drank a little bit himself. And so if they did, they got a long rest. Cause I'm like, yeah, why not? These guys, they're benevolent. They're great. So then they found, or they said, you know, I know you're seeking the tablet. We're going to see if you're worthy. And then that's when they attacked. So.
Ooh, I like that. See, that's such a good way to use monsters you normally wouldn't get to use when they do the, like, we're going to test you.
Yeah.
Type thing. Planetars, I love that idea. Well, we're gonna have a whole freaking episode about that. Okay. I love it.
Sounds great. It. Yeah. So I used the new Sphinx of Valor stat block, which is pretty great, I gotta say. There's this roaring mechanic that it has. So like on the first round, it does a roar, it does a certain thing. Second round does a roar, does something a little worse. Third round does a roar, does even worse and does a bunch of damage with it and stuff. So, my goal was go through three rounds. If they can last for three rounds, they're worthy. Cause you know, I have to have an end goal. I don't want them to actually kill these things, but they're going to go all out and attack. So, you know, they go in, they're fighting and stuff. It was tough. It was challenging. The planetars alone deal a lot of damage with their flaming swords. The Sphinx did a lot. And I actually remember to use legendary actions, which I'm really bad about. So it's like teleporting across the room, going against, you know, squishier targets and stuff, and you know, doing pretty great. Let's see, the second roar, I think, paralyzed a couple people. One of the characters went down, and I freaking love it. But my arcane trickster rogue has a familiar. And so she sent her familiar over, got a big mouthful of the water, and then baby birded it into the downed player's mouth to give them the long rest. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my
so,
God.
Full long rest right there. Everything back. I'm like, crap. So yeah, smart move. They fought more and everything. At the end of the third round, two of the players were down. But again, the team survived through the three rounds. So then we stopped the fight. And it was really great. I had a lot of fun with it. And then, you know, they got, you know, res back up and everything. And then that's when they went into the doors to the tablet room opened. They walked in. My sorcerer touched the tablet, flash a light. And then that's when they quantum leaped into the other bodies. And then basically I just did a, you know, that character's name. The level 10 version of them. I said, hey, pay attention. This is, you know, this could save your life. This is going to be hopefully the final fight in the War of Souls, and cut it off there. And then that's when I'm like, hey, this is what we're doing next session. And everybody seemed pretty happy about it. So going into the flashback session, my intro had a little bit to be desired for. I gave a lot of kind of expositional dump with names of characters and stuff like that. Could have done better at that, but overall gave them the information of, hey, you're going with this champion guy who has one of the artifacts that they had recovered in their main characters. So like, you're in his squad with a bunch of other people. You're going to go down south. You're going to hold the line as long as you can. You're going to get it or be told to retreat back. And then hold the line there. And then that's when the shield will go up. You have 12 seconds to get in the shield. Otherwise, kablooey. So this is where I had a little bit of a problem from the setup, and I told them beforehand, it's going to be loosey-goosey. You know, this is going to be a big battle. We're going to kind of figure this out. And I was going to play minion rules, like we kind of talked about before, but I had so many other non-player like heroes and, you know, good guys on the field too, that I'm like, okay, we're going to do this differently. We're going to see how it goes. So basically in the initiative, I put like one of a certain group, like all the archers were represented by this one. So all the archers would go, and I had all the paladins would go, and I had all of the zombies would go, you know, just kind of that sort of stuff. Sorry, not zombies first. It was the champion of Loth came in. So there were a bunch of drow, a bunch of driders, and a bunch of giant spiders. So basically what I did is they kind of went and they all split up, which made it a lot harder. And I was kind of just, you know, trying to pay attention on who they were focusing on. And then, you know, hit points weren't a thing at that point, because I'm like, there's no way I can track all this that's going on. Not going to. And so, you know, paid attention to who they were attacking and everything. And then after a round, I would have them, someone or one of my players roll a D20, and I'd roll a D20. And basically whoever rolled higher, that side did better on that round. And then I would kind of, you know, take some of the members off the board on both sides, you know, for casualties and stuff, but more would come off based on whoever, you know, lost that roll. We ended up doing, I think, 3 or 4 rounds of that. They did a good job. They wiped out all the giant spiders pretty fast because, you know, they're low levels. Took out, I think, a few of the driders too. And then, you know, a bunch of drow. They got called in. They wiped the floor with all of the drow. The two champions fought because there's no way that they would have been able to live against that champion. So the dwarven champion took out the Loth champion, which was great. And then that's when the stench of the undead came. And there's this character, Lilith, that I've been kind of hinting at in the main session, who is behind bringing down this barrier that was cast during this whole ritual during the flashback. And she looked very undead, had like blue fire in her eyes and stuff, cast magic. You can probably figure out what she is. But she's also someone who is dangerous in the future too. So what's going on there? But basically, army of the undead starts coming, and the dwarf says, you know, fall back. I'll hold them as long as I can with the rest of the protectors. So then their squad runs back to this thing called the Celestial Focus, which is this big, huge thing covered in runes and stuff that is going to be casting this barrier spell that will basically banish all the gods from the material plane. So after our break, I came back and said, okay, we're going to do this a little differently, because I don't think that it worked as well in that first, you know, big battle. So stick kind of a little bit more closer in a group. And I had, instead of heroes and stuff all spread out over the map, I had them in clumps so that they could, you know, better defend the central focus. So, you know, kind of made sense, gameplay style and story style. So then undead came, a whole bunch of like elemental stuff came from the north, so like mephits and everything. And then did a round, basically one barrage took away 80% of the zombies and skeletons that were there, because, you know, a whole bunch of undead. Once one mephit died, chain reaction, a bunch of them other died because, you know, blow up and everything. And then that first round was really easy for some reason. And then that's when Tiamat showed up. And
I love that. That run was really easy. And then Tiamat.
Yeah. So the champion of Bahamut sprouts her wings that she gets from her artifact and flew to face Tiamat alone. Bahamut comes swooping in to help. 5 chromatic dragons pop in, one of each color, and basically start attacking the different groups, leaving the white one for my level 10 characters. So then they start fighting the white dragon, which I'm like, this is great. they're level 10 fighting, you know, a CR like 13, 14 or something, use the new stat block on it. And it went really well. It was a really good fight. They were doing a darn good job. The monk.
How was the new stat block?
New stat block was fun. I mean, it, since it's an adult and it's, you know, a white dragon, it doesn't have any of the casting or anything like that, but like the legendary actions worked really well. The fact that it has the rend for in there three times worked well. Like it was a good stat block. I enjoyed it. I didn't, you know, add a bunch to it just because I was juggling so much other stuff. So it worked out. So then they start fighting that. The monk just, God, they were rolling crits left and right. It was absolutely amazing. Like all the players were doing great. Next round goes by. Bahamut comes in. Bahamut was in. Three golden dragons who go with Bahamut came in to, you know, help the non-player groups kind of fight their dragons and stuff.
Hey, you went all out.
Yeah, I'm just like, this is going to be fun. Going to have a great time. I should have taken screenshots of the map. So, you know, they end up killing the white dragon the round before the shield popped up, which I was going to have the shield pop up on round four. Except one of my players did something to kind of help it along. So it popped up on round three instead. So then they had two rounds to get to where they needed to go. So they had taken out the white dragon and started their retreat. And then at this point I'm like, okay, well, the other dragons are there. They're going to be a threat. Tiamat yelled, bring down that shield. So those dragons are going to go and try to, you know, overwhelm the shield with attacks and stuff. But then I'm like, but they were fighting, so we're going to see what sort of health they have. So I ended up rolling percentile dice and then subtracting that percentile from their health pools. So then my players started taking out the other dragons,
which fantastic.
Was pretty great. And the gold dragons were there to kind of help. They were able to get inside the shield. There were some dragonborn like paladins, dragonborn and Bahamut were still left out there. One of them stayed behind to hold the green dragon so that the rest of their buddies can go in and make it to the shield. But my team ended up destroying the green dragon to give him time to get into the shield. They helped some others who were outside back in, you know, before the two rounds were up. And then finally, you know, the round hit, ritual was cast. All of a sudden, all these, you know, heroes with like different artifacts and stuff, like, just all came together. There's a big flash of light. And then my sorcerer who had touched the tablet from the previous session was back holding the tablet in their hand. And then that's where we ended the session.
Oh, phenomenal.
And then I told them, hey, guess what? You guys have leveled to 17. So now they're level 17. And because of what happened, they are going to be switching to the 2024 rules in the next session. So
nice.
I'm using it as they powered up. And then on top of that, I am going to give them an ability score feat as an echo of the past because they had the experience with those other characters. So they're like kind of carrying their spirits with them going forward.
Very cool.
So
very, very cool.
Yeah, so I'm glad it went well. Oh, it was so much fun. I'm going to meet with each of them individually. We're going to go through and kind of, you know, update the characters. I already told them if something doesn't make sense or it's not as much fun, we're going to go with the fun way. So if there's like something from the 2014 that is more fun, we're doing that in the character because, you know, it's something that they've been doing this whole time anyway.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to updating spells, to like new versions, especially the healing spells, just because, you know, at levels 15, 16, 17, a level one cure wounds is going to do nothing. Two gives you at least a little bit more, the 2024 version gives, you know, two D8s as opposed to the one. So, you know, you get more and all that stuff. So I'm really excited about that. Mechanical spells are being different. Like the new counter spell is amazing. And I'm happy that we're switching to that. There are going to be a couple downsides where it's like, what is it like? Spiritual weapon is a concentration spell now, you know, so there's some readjustments and stuff. But yeah, we're going to go through, we're going to talk about it. We're going to go with what works and what's more fun. And, we're going to continue on our goal to try to hit 20 before this whole thing ends.
I love it. I'm so glad that you're getting to see like your big story realized.
Yeah. It's
that sounded like an awesome flashback session.
It was really cool. And like especially after that first big battle where I'm like, I don't really know how I want to do this, you know, and just kind of experimenting. Everybody was super accepting of like, hey, we're just going to have fun. We're going to see what happens. And then by tightening it up on that second big battle, it really added a lot to the story. So I'm really glad that I kind of made those adjustments on the fly and just, you know, kept it going. And just throwing this out there again, this has been going on since April of 2018. So it's been a 7-year campaign so far.
It's wild. Wild.
Yeah. So crazy. I never thought that I'd be playing a D&D game for this long, considering every single other tabletop game I've played has fizzled out after like 3 sessions. So being the DM kind of helps sometimes.
It does. It's going to be a heck of a story.
Yeah, I think so.
And just all that you created along the way.
Yeah. And I'm already kind of ankle deep in ideas and stuff for my Spelljammer campaign. So I'm looking forward to that too, but still really excited about the rest of this game and kind of where it's going. So it's, you know, overall just a lot of fun. And I think I've said it before on the show, if not, D&D has turned into being a much needed creative outlet that I never knew I had or I craved.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had a blast doing those sessions.
Very, very cool.
How about you? I know that you said that you've had to go on a little bit of a hiatus. Any chance you got to play? Or
sadly, I am on hiatus right now from both of my campaigns, just for scheduling and people reasons currently. Hopefully they will both eventually get back after a little bit of time, but until then I have been tabletop RPG-less, which has been very sad for me. However, here in I get 2-ish weeks I will be jumping in a game one of my friends is running. And it's a system called Best Left Buried, which is like a rules light fantasy horror RPG. So I'm going to be playing in a one shot with that. And not that it's super close yet, but something that I'm very excited about. My friendly local game store yearly hosts an RPG weekend. It's called RPGW, you know, RPG weekend, or Really Pleasant Gaming Weekend.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, so it's like 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, of just RPG sessions that you can sign up for. And this will be the first year that I've actually been free to be able to go. So I'm super excited. And it's a great opportunity to try out a ton of different systems that I normally wouldn't have time for or wouldn't be able, you know, to get my group to do on like an ad hoc basis, because almost all the sessions are very much like learn to play type sessions or very, you know, beginner friendly one shot type thing. So I'm signed up. I'm going to be doing 7 different systems over the course of the 3 days. I'm going to be running I'm not going to be running anything. I'm going to be playing in them. There was no one running Vampire the Masquerade. So I told the coordinator that I might have to do that next year if nobody did, because Vampire is amazing. But I'm going to be playing in the Marvel RPG. I'm going to be playing Candela. I'm going to be playing Daggerheart. I'm going to be playing Call of Cthulhu. I'm going to be playing Pirate Borg. I'm going to be playing a system called Crisis, which I had never heard of, but it intrigued me. It's basically like a very narrative one where there's basically a situation and then a person trying to solve it. And it goes back and forth. There's no dice involved. It's just a very narrative driven one. It sounded very interesting, so I signed up for it. And then finally, I'm also going to be running in a session of the Stormlight RPG. Seven different systems. My introvert self will likely be exhausted by the end of this weekend. But I'm very, very excited for it and to just expand my horizons a little bit and take back, you know, the learnings from those things to potentially, you know, make my games better.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, very excited to try new systems and have a lot of fun.
Well, that's really cool, though. I'm excited, especially about the Marvel one. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've been really kind of jonesing for a superhero RPG of some sort. I know that there are a few that have been done over the years, but I think the Marvel one is really one of the only like big current like updated ones. I think there's like Mutants and Masterminds. There's one or two others that are, you know, a little older. But the Marvel one, I believe, is not like a create your superhero. I believe it's a you play one of the actual Marvel characters.
Oh, that's cool. Right?
Instead of so like in this scenario, I believe it's going to be like Laura Kinney, Wolverine, Spider-Man, Storm, and Black Widow and Captain America or something like that.
Okay.
So we'll be each of the players will be one of those characters. So that'll be kind of fun in a lot of ways because you're playing a named character, but I know a lot about those characters. So I'm very excited to try that out.
Well, very cool.
It should be a lot. I'm pretty pumped for that.
Well, I'm
not for a little while.
Yeah.
But soon.
I'm waiting to hear all about all of it.
Yeah, that'll be quite the outro.
That'll just be the episode that day.
That'll be the episode. And I mean, I think that'd be really cool because it's again, like we talked about at the top, you know, a rising tide floats all ships.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I'm very excited to learn about more and be able to broaden my scope of play for sure.
Well, good.
But that is for another time in several months. So until then, that will be the end of this episode. Ben, thank you so much for being here. It's always fun to talk about tabletop RPGs with you. It's so great hearing about your story and all the cool stuff that is coming from that. I can't wait to hear what happens next, especially as you switch over to the 2024 edition and you start in on your like final arc of your giant campaign.
Yeah, it's seriously, I'm kind of scared to finish the whole thing because then I need to start all over again. But at the same time, it gives me freedom to make an entirely different world. So yeah, see how it goes.
Exactly. But until that time, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached?
You bet. So if you have a flashback that you've done or you're thinking about doing it and want to tell us all about it, there's a couple different ways that you can go about it. First and foremost, you can send us an email, you know, that old archaic form of communication. Our email address is dndiscussions@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you there. But if you want to reach out, you know, just out there in short form, we're on Blue Sky. You can find us at dndiscussions on Blue Sky. Ryan is at tbkzord. I am at Ben Bumhofer. But if you want to jump in and talk about your flashback or your game or ask advice or chat with us or any of our community, Discord is really the place to go. And you can find a link to our Discord on dndiscussions.com, which coincidentally has every other episode that we've ever had. So you can find it there, as well as links to all of our socials and our Discord server. Definitely check it out. We've got a great group of people there. People ask questions. We discuss D&D, other games. It's a great place, so we'd love to see you there. If you're listening to this and this is your very first time, dndiscussions.com is a great place to hear all the other episodes if you'd like what you hear. Also, we are on all your various podcast players of choice. And another show that if you want to hear me, you know, play the game that I talk about all the time, you can always check out Plus 5 to Hit. Our third episode of our third campaign is up, so it's a really great place to kind of start and jump in. And you can learn all about my really cool barbarian that I play, which is entirely different than the bard that I played before, which I'm still getting used to. So it's going to be a lot of fun as that continues. So Plus 5 to Hit, check it out. That being said, you know what, Ryan, if I had to flashback to any of our previous episodes, I couldn't choose because they're all fun every single time we get to talk to you. So thank you very much for joining me this week. Thank you, everybody who supports us and listens. You guys are great. And until next time, everybody, roll high and always be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.